Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Lynelle Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. She's a certified educational planner with over 20 years of experience in college admissions and financial aid, and currently has had her own college counseling practice. Lynelle volunteers to work with underrepresented students through a local and a national not-for-profit, and is the author of a college admission and financial aid workbook entitled Moving Forward: What Teens and Parents Need to Know in the Years Leading to College. Always great to have you here. Lynelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
If you want to join in at home, we would love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can, of course, tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or you can go to Facebook to WAMC Radio, and you'll find a Vox Pop post there, or you can go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and there's a spot where you can comment there, or you can call us. That's a good thing to do on a call-in show. It's 1-800-348-2551. All right, I'm tired. You got to do the rest of the show. You know, so we mentioned in the introduction, and we don't often talk about this, this national not-for-profit work that you do. And so what is it that you do?
I got involved with a group that is actually headquartered in Seattle, but it serves kids from across the country. It's a competitive process, selection process, for students who are very high achieving and incredibly civically minded, but who are all low income.
Okay. Now, are there a lot of those that fit that profile?
Yes, there are an awful lot of those.
And so how do you go about helping them?
My role specifically is I am the financial aid counselor for them. Because of the fact that they are low to maybe moderate income at most, you know, financial aid becomes a real obstacle to completion for them. And really, in an effort to help them not only get into college, but persist and complete a college degree, it was determined that having a resource there that they could call and that knew them personally and that knew their situation would help them persist. And I think they would tell you that that has been an important key. And in fact, tonight I do my first conference call with the kids who will be filling out their FAFSA anytime now.
Okay, so for those who have not tuned into this program, the word FAFSA is said quite often. Tell us what it is.
The FAFSA is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And if you are, if you have a student who will enroll in college in the fall, the FAFSA is the one form everybody must complete in order to be considered for federal aid, state aid, or institutional aid.
So this is a standardized thing. Everybody fills out the same information. And it's used by every college.
It is. Exactly. You said it better than I could.
That's very rare, by the way. I think I'll write that down.
For some schools, they will require information in addition to the FAFSA, but everybody requires the FAFSA. The trick with the FAFSA is that every school could potentially have their own filing deadline. And so one of the tricky parts of the FAFSA is knowing when to file. And kind of what happens is you have to look at all the schools you want it sent to, figure out what all their deadlines are, and then work from the earliest one.
Okay, deadlines. Now, we hit a deadline at the first of the year.
A lot of schools hit a deadline at the first of the year. That is a very big college admission deadline, often. Some schools, it could potentially be before the first. The University of Maryland is a good example. Their deadline is November 1st. Some schools have deadlines much later than January 1st, but a lot of them will use January 1st or so as their deadline.
Lynelle Engelmeyer is our guest. We talk about getting your ducks in a row and getting ready to send your child off to college, maybe going yourself. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. So a lot of colleges have that January 1st deadline. Now, it's been a long time since I filled out a college application and went through that whole process. Explain to me, tell me, what order are we doing this? We apply first, and then if we get in, then we worry about the aid? It's a frightening way to go about it.
It is a frightening way to go about it. And because in a little bit of a respect, you're kind of throwing caution to the wind that you can afford this, although I will tell you that there are steps being taken to address that. But to answer your original question is, you first have to identify where you want to go to school, and part of that decision might be, or where you want to apply, and part of that decision may take into account how much that school costs or will cost you, And those are not necessarily the same thing. You apply, and then as that application is being decided upon, you concurrently apply for financial aid. So you don't have the luxury of saying, okay, well, I've been accepted to 3 out of 6 of the schools that I've applied to. Now I apply for financial aid to those 3. You kind of have to do things concurrently a little bit. The thing that's so frightening about it is that sort of previously, you, the student, have only really had access to the sticker price of a school. So you could look at, say, SUNY Albany and know that tuition fees, room and board are somewhere in the neighborhood of, and I'm using rounded numbers, $20,000, $22,000. You can look at a place like an RPI in a Union and know that that figure is upwards of $50,000, but that's the sticker price. And at most of those schools, what students actually pay and what the majority of students actually pay is something less than that. So
the something is the key thing.
Exactly. Something is the key thing. And because so many students were being scared off by the sticker price, a few years ago, I'm going to say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, the federal government mandated that every college have on their website something called a net price calculator. We refer to it as an NPC, net price calculator.
Clever.
Yeah, thanks. And what happens is it's hard to find on most schools' websites. You have to use the little search engine to find it. But it is a tool that will actually help you give you an estimate being the keyword, of what you might have to pay to go to that school. So it'll ask you things like your parents' income. It'll ask you some other real basic questions, might be some based on your academic performance. And then they will tell you, you're likely to qualify for X dollars of aid at this school.
Likely. Okay, likely is, again, you're looking at someone who's very nervous about all this. Likely, how likely?
That's a really good question. I have had students where it has come out to be almost dollar exact. I have students where it has not at all, and it's been a little bit of a shock. So it's an estimate, and I always emphasize that with students. It is an estimate. It's better than what you had before, which was the sticker price.
Yeah.
But it is not, don't count your chickens before they hatch. Well, this is don't count your financial aid until the package is in your, official package is in your hand.
1-800-348-2551 is our number on Vox Pop. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. Is there such a thing, when you buy a house, you can have a buyer's agent who negotiates a price and gets a better price for you and gets better perks. Oh, they'll fix the roof. They'll do this. They'll do that. Is there such a thing as a buyer's agent for someone perhaps well-heeled who wants to go to school?
I think that probably there are a lot of people that would groan if they heard the expression buyer's agent.
I'm sorry, but that's what it is.
Yeah, no, there are several ways to have somebody help you negotiate the system. The school counselor is definitely the first and foremost person. With students that come to me for help, I'm very upfront about the fact that if you're getting what you need out of your guidance office, please don't seek somebody else out. There is no magic to this process. In the era of large student populations, school spending cuts, which often means cuts in guidance counselors, there are some people who want some additional guidance. And so for people like that, there are independent counselors for students. The Philadelphia School District is always my best example of a school district that really hacked their guidance staffing about a year or so ago because of the budget situation there. I believe they laid off about 2/3 of the guidance counselors in the city of Philadelphia, which is an entirely low-income district. And so those kids really needed some help. And so there are what we refer to as CBOs, community-based organizations, that will often step in and attempt to help assist students with the college selection process. So there are a variety of ways to get some other assistance.
You said negotiate the system, but what about negotiating the bottom line? My kid, he's a great violinist, and he does this and this and this and this. What can you do for me?
I will tell you that a college or university is probably not likely to respond very well to somebody other than
like Scott Boras doing the job,
the family doing it themselves. And I would never in a million years attempt to step in place of that family. Almost never. I have done it once or twice, but it is usually a very extenuating, complicated financial aid case that needs to be explained further. Mm-hmm. And because of my background, I'm often able to do that, where a student who doesn't understand the system may have difficulty conveying it. But if it's a case of negotiating, really, that is between the family and the school. Some schools have a policy, absolutely not, we won't negotiate. Some schools will say, well, give us your package from the other schools, we'll see what we can do.
Interesting.
What I encourage families to do is to make sure that the schools are aware of any extenuating financial circumstances that you might face.
Okay.
So, you know, if you say to me that you are caring for an elderly parent and have some expenses associated with that, medication or modifications you had to make to your home or things like that, I will share with families how to express that to the school so that the school can take that into account when preparing the financial aid package.
All right, we'll talk a little more about making that case in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. Talk about the process. You get into the college, you figure out what it's going to cost, and then you figure out how you pay for it, or, I don't know, mix the order up. But we'll talk more in a bit.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts. Offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs. Massage for couples and individuals, EastHeaven.com. Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design, featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Murrelat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, curtislumber.com. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, InterimHealthcare.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Linnell Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. She volunteers to work with underrepresented students through local and national not-for-profit. She is an expert on all sorts of things related to college admissions and financial aid and some of those things. And we're talking about the deadlines and the financial quagmire of this whole situation. How much does an average public university cost?
I can tell you what it is in New York, and, you know, I don't think it's that far off at a lot of other places. Tuition is actually at public institutions, if you are an in-state student, often the lesser charge. In New York, I believe that tuition is somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000-ish dollars. Room and board is then probably about $12,000 or so on top of that. If you're an out-of-stater, that $20-ish thousand dollar figure about doubles. And that is true at a state school most places, that the in-state fee is roughly half of the out-of-state fee.
All right. Now, what about a private? An average private university?
The average number is actually cheaper than the number in the Mid-Atlantic New England region. In this area, I would tell you that average for a private, tuition fees, room and board, is creeping up to about $55,000. If you go south of the Mason-Dixon line, that number's a little bit less.
Okay. That's a lot.
It's an awful lot, yeah.
So you apply, say you're at the average kid and you apply for two or three schools, you get into one or you get into two, say.
Okay, so Ray, I hate to say this, but you're dating yourself because we applied to two or three schools.
Kids, I applied to two, got into both.
Okay, so
went to the one we could afford.
Kids now are applying to 7 to 12.
Really?
Yeah.
When did that start?
You know, there are a couple reasons that have driven that number way up. One of them is the advent of the Common Application, which has made it easier to apply to more schools.
Yeah.
One of them is the internet, which has made it easier to apply to more schools. And one of them is the fact that there are Number one, more kids now in this demographic than when you and I went, so there are more of them. They are applying to more schools, and so it becomes this vicious cycle of making it more competitive. And then, of course, financing being an important factor, you now have to have more options.
And you don't have, do you have to pay a fee when you apply?
In most cases, yes.
I thought so.
So, for example, at the SUNY schools, the fee is $50. I have seen schools that are $90. So, you know, most families will spend several hundred dollars in application fees. Students who are who qualify for the free or reduced lunch program often will qualify for fee waivers, which is something, again, the first line of defense for finding out about a fee waiver is always your school counselor.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551 if you join in, if you want to join in here on the conversation with Linnell Engelmeyer. And you're into college, then say you're into three colleges. Say you're the average student now who apparently applies to 7 to 12 colleges, which blows my mind. Say you're in three. Do you then go for financial aid for all three?
Again, you wouldn't wait until you've been admitted. You would actually wait until, you know, you hit send on the actual application, and then you start working on the financial aid forms. And what happens is so for example, if you've applied to seven schools, you would actually fill out financial aid paperwork for all seven. The three who accepted you would then, once they know that you've been accepted, would then prepare a financial aid package for you. So it sort of happens concurrently.
This as the parent of several, it's a very frightening concept. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. So when you apply for the financial aid, are you just doing that common form, the FAFSA?
Or
are you filling out everything?
You are always doing the FAFSA. The one nice thing about the FAFSA, and there may only be one, and that is you only have to fill it out one time for all the schools. So everybody sees the same information. And you just list the schools to which you're applying.
But every college has certain other information they need, right?
Potentially. Again, let's go back to our state schools. Usually state schools will take just the FAFSA and that's it, at least right up front. If you enroll there, ultimately they might want something more from you, but that's because you've enrolled. If you were applying to, you know, let's look locally, and if you were applying to, say, Union or RPI or something like that, they also require a form called the CSS profile, which is kind of the other big form for financial aid. And that asks things that the FAFSA either does not or does not ask in enough detail.
Such as?
For example, the FAFSA does not ask anything about the value of your primary residence. The CSS profile will ask you the purchase year, the purchase price, and the debt against it.
Why should that matter?
Again, for the federal formula, it does not at all. For the some institutions will use that as when they look at your full financial picture. So, you know, if you lived in a $500,000 home and you had no debt against it, it would be an indicator of a different kind of financial picture than would a $240,000 home with $180,000.
So then it would benefit all of us who have kids who will be going to school in the next 5 or 10 years to rack up as much debt on as little home equity as possible?
You know, again, there are so many, it depends to that. First of all, for most people, the difference, you know, unless you are living, you know, outside of New York City, San Francisco or something like that, and you have complete equity in your, you know, $3 million home, the difference between $160,000 of debt and $180,000 of debt or $200,000 of debt, in most cases, it's not going to make a difference. And actually, there are ways for families to sit down and kind of at least initially play with some of these numbers so that you're not just left kind of standing there waiting to be a passive participant in this process. And in fact, you know, even people with younger kids can say, okay, well, if my kid were applying to college today, what might our obligation look like? There are two places that I really like to go to. The first one is, it's called finaid.org, F-I-N-A-I-D.org. Mm-hmm. There's a link on the homepage that says calculators, and then there's a link on that page that says expected family contribution calculator. That is basically the same formula that the feds are using on the FAFSA.
Very interesting.
So if you said, gee, if I were sending a kid to college today, what would it look like? And in fact, they also have a formula that mimics the CSS profile. That would give you what those forms would expect that you can pay. That's the first place. The second place I like to go to is actually new, period, and new to me. And it's a website called College Raptor.
Okay.
And it's collegeraptor.com. Raptor as in the dinosaur.
Sure.
And they are using a net price calculator for each school. So let's say your oldest child is a son, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so let's say your oldest son is looking at starting out with a list of 20 schools.
Right.
Okay, and you say, okay, but let's not rule out schools that cost $60,000 a year just because that's the sticker price. Let's see what we're actually going to have to pay.
Yeah.
You could go to the websites of each of those 20 schools and key in the numbers separately for each of those 20 schools to see what your net price would be. College Raptor has developed something where they allow you to do that all from their site. So again, like the FAFSA, where you only have to enter the information once.
Yeah.
On College Raptor, you would only have to enter it once, and they will give you an estimate of what you would have to pay at each school.
Now, we will get right to the phones. I apologize. I have one more question, one more follow-up for Linnell, and then we'll get to the phones. Michael, stand by in Pittsfield. So I've asked you this before, and my cynical side says Johnny's parents can't afford to put too much money into this private college. Their ability to pay much, the kid can get in the school, maybe not exceptionally and not worthy of too many scholarships. Doesn't the school just say, "Beh, next"?
That's actually a really good question. And what happens is schools, not all financial aid candidates are created equal. Many schools, not all, but many schools will actually rank their applicants in terms of desirability. So, Ray, for example, if it comes down to you and I, and they admit both of us, and we both have roughly the same amount of financial need, okay? But you bring some talent to this that I don't. You are, for example, an exceptional trombone player.
Yes.
And the school, the orchestra conductor desperately wants you because you have been a standout in your orchestra locally and regionally in high school. And you're a student and all that other good stuff. They might give you a slightly more favorable financial aid package than they do me. And that can be more favorable in one of two ways. It can be more favorable in terms of a bottom line. It could also be more favorable in terms of the component parts. You and I could get the same bottom line package, but yours might have more grant money. Mine could have more loan money.
Okay.
Now, that being said, just as kind of a last word on this one, is that there are schools out there that do meet 100% of financial need. So if you and I both got into the same Ivy League school and we both had the same financial need, theoretically, we should both get the same financial aid package.
All right, let's finally go to the phones now. And Michael in Pittsfield, thank you for waiting. You're first.
Yes, I just wanted to make the comment that what we typically call tuition when we're having these conversations is actually a different breakdown when you end up getting your bill. So from my own personal experience, recently graduating, I may have been spending $8,000 or $10,000 a year in what we typically call tuition, but when you get your bill, the tuition line says, you know, maybe $1,200 or $1,300. The rest of it is made up of student fees and student government fees and technology fees. And I found my personal experience, this is something important that people should probably know.
So tuition is not the entire picture.
Right. What we call tuition is actually a much larger group of separate fees. So when you get your bill and you see tuition, it's actually going to be that actual line on the bill will be a very small portion of what you actually end up paying.
What we refer to as are the costs is kind of
right.
The umbrella term for exactly what you're
yep.
talking about. And
sure.
there usually my abbreviation, and my students at my nonprofit know this because I scribble it all over the place, is TFRB, tuition, fees, room, and board. And so I always write TFRB so that they know it is not just, in fact, tuition.
Okay.
And usually, if you look at a school's website, they will actually break down for you each of those costs.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to Elizabeth in Saratoga. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi. My question is, I have been saving since the day my son was born in a 529 plan. And I expect to have approximately $100,000 in that when he's ready to start college. And a couple of friends have implied that I might be hurting myself by having that much saved as far as, you know, getting financial aid.
So that is actually a really good question. And the answer is it depends. So for example, you are a New Yorker. Okay. And let's just say for sake of argument that you said it's a son.
Yes. And I only have the one child.
Okay. So let's say that your son is going to go to SUNY Binghamton. Okay. So again, you're talking about $20,000 a year. The likelihood at SUNY Binghamton that he would get grant or scholarship money to cover some of that is significantly lower. You are probably in that case, probably replacing some loan money. Okay.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two, it's very interesting. I talked about these websites that do like the EFC calculator and the net price calculator. One of the things that you'll find is that assets are treated much more kindly than income. The formula is income heavy.
Okay.
So one of the things that would be interesting and you could actually do is to go to that EFC calculator, fill out that FAFSA mock form and do it with the $100,000 and without the $100,000, and you will be able to see exactly the difference that that makes for you.
Because our income, we're solidly middle class. Our income isn't that high. It's only because I made such a priority of saving, all these years.
Can I ask you how old your son is?
He's 13, so he still has all of high school
to
get through. He's going into his last year of middle school.
Okay, so does he have grandparents and or aunts or uncles living?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm not actually going to say this. I'm going to direct you where to look. If you go to finaid.org, I think you can just Google this. Look at the treatment of a 529 plan in the name of a grandparent.
Okay, now this doesn't involve any offshore accounts
No offshore accounts, and it's actually totally legit.
Okay.
And one of the reasons, Ray, you asked me why there's this supplemental form.
Yeah.
And this is part of the reason. Because on the FAFSA, a 529 owned by a grandparent doesn't get reported.
You see, that's why you listen, Elizabeth. That's why you listen to this lady.
However, on the CSS profile at a private institution, so for example, let's say your son applies to a private school that requires the CSS profile, and they don't all, but some do, it would ask you that.
Okay. It's complicated.
It's very complicated. And it's what scares a lot of people off.
Well, thank you. This has been a very interesting program.
Thank you. And I will still tell you I am a firm believer in the fact that you are better off having saved than not saved. That is my personal belief.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. We appreciate the call very much. So you have some sketchy sort of tax shelter things going on?
I have nothing sketchy.
Anything you want to confess, Linnell?
Nothing to confess. No offshore accounts.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And what number is Sarah on? Is that line 3? Yeah, you got to put the number on there on the sheet there. Thanks, Megan. Sarah, in Cleveland, Ohio, you're on.
Hi. I am a college professor at a private school in Ohio. And I'm just calling to make a comment or a question about private loans, private student loans, because I recently was counseling an alum to go and apply to grad school to get a terminal degree in his field. And after, even though it was looking like he could apply and get full funding for an MFA, he actually figured out that because his private loan would not be able to be deferred during his even full-time schooling, he would not be able to go back to school. He wouldn't be able to afford the payments on the private loan. The other loans could be deferred as a full-time student. And I was stunned by this and have taken it to my administration to ask that they look into, you know, how the students are being, whether they're being encouraged to take private loans. But the fact that he couldn't get a terminal degree is really alarming to me. I wondered if you had any comments.
That's a really good point. And I'll tell you the good news of all of this. First of all, I'm going to back up in just kind of a word on student loans. The vast majority of student loans come under the umbrella of the what's called the Federal Direct Student Loan Program. It used to be called the Stafford Loan. They kind of changed the name of it, but it's the same basic principle. And basically what that is that student loan principal payment, and in some cases interest, can be deferred as long as a student is enrolled continuously at least half time. So if I send my child off as an 18-year-old student to college, they get a student loan. It is deferred for the 4 years that they're in college. And then if they keep going at least part-time, that loan continues to be deferred. If my student stops their enrollment, they then have to go back full-time in order to enter back into that deferred status. What Sarah's talking about is that her student in question took a loan that is not through that federal direct student loan program. It is from a private lender. And they get to make up their own rules because they're not under the federal umbrella. The good news of all of that is that because of the credit crunch several years ago, many, many, many of the private lenders have pulled out of the educational loan market. So there are very few private loans left outside of the federal program.
Sarah, we're going to take a break here, but thank you very much. And we appreciate the call from Cleveland, Ohio. The number to call here, 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back with Lynell Engelmeyer.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. And the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care, CECAA.com.
Hey, guess what? The fun drive is on the way. Did you know that? It starts on, I believe, the 2nd. It's the Monday, first Monday of February. And, you know, we do the fun drive, and it's a lot of fun. But if you'd like to shorten that, you can go to our website, WAMC.org, and feed the lockbox. You'll see an icon there. It looks like a lockbox, I suppose. And you click on that. You make your pledge now. It counts on day one of the drive. But I digress. Lynell Engelmeyer is our guest. Let's go back to the phones. And Tracy in Pleasant Valley. Tracy.
Hi there.
Hi.
Here's my question. I have a daughter who was just accepted to college. My husband and I started a 529 account when she was born, and we have over $100,000 in there, so we think we're doing pretty well. Her tuition will be $62,000 a year at the school, and I'm wondering if that we get no financial aid, and I'm wondering if my husband retires, will that help us in our situation because he's about retirement age now?
So a couple of things. Congratulations to your daughter. Kudos to you guys for being such great savers. And again, what I would do is what I said to a previous caller, which is I would go to that finaid.org, click on the calculators link, click on the expected family contribution calculator, and you can then actually plug in the different numbers. So it would probably be a good baseline for you to fill out the based on your current income and assets so that you know what your starting point is, then fill it out again with his retirement income and assets. And I would see what that difference is. Do you have any other children?
No.
Okay. I would see what that is. The other thing that I would do, does this school require the CSS profile?
Yes, we did all that.
Okay. So the other thing is, if you spent down that 529 in the first 2 years, you spent it down to zero, basically, will the school consider you for any additional funding in years 3 and 4 between a possible retirement and the depletion of that asset? And that is a question that only the school can answer, but it is a question that's very much worth asking.
Okay. All right.
No, oh, thanks, Tracy. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Mark in Amherst. Mark, you're on.
I have a question about grandparents funding or giving gifts to children that are in college and helping with tuition that way. How does the college or financial aid treat that?
I answer every question the same way. It depends. And it depends, part of it depends on how it is gifted. I already talked a little bit about 529 plan and how those are handled. If grandparent wrote a $10,000 check to your child and your child put it in their bank account, that is your child's money. Okay.
Yeah.
If it is something like a UGMA, and I'm not a financial advisor, believe me, but if it is a uniform gifts to minors, I believe that may be treated slightly differently. And it is a case of, again, where I know that the CSS profile will very specifically ask you, is there any money in a uniform gifts to minor account? I don't know that it gets reported on the FAFSA. It may not get reported on there.
Mark, kind of a bad connection there. I apologize, but we'll have to leave it at that. And you want to make that clear always, every show, that you are not a financial advisor.
I am absolutely not a financial advisor. In fact, we talked to one about our own children's college accounts.
Okay. Let's go on over to Jeffrey, upstate New York?
Upstate New Jersey in Sussex County.
Oh, look at that. Nice to have you on the line. You are on with Linnell Engelmeyer.
Thank you. I have a 529 college savings plan for my 10-year-old boy. I started it when I was working, but I'm on Social Security disability now. I'm still trying to keep it going. The minimum, by the way, I can put in is $15 a month, and the maximum is way beyond what I can put in. Well, I'm wondering how it would look for financial aid for, of course, by the time he's in college 8 years from now, I'm not going to be having, I don't make very much. So how would it look for that? And I should say one more thing. He does have a disability, pervasive developmental disorder. The neurologist said children like my son have problems focusing, but they can be extremely intelligent, which he is, so he doesn't have a problem with grades. So I would love him to go to a private college as I did. So what do you think about that scenario?
If your concern is that, you know, somebody's going to look at your family's financial situation and say, how does this, you know, father who's on disability, how has he managed to have a 529 for his kid?
Right.
I would not particularly worry about that simply because the first question, if I were to look at that, is I would say, well, gee, when did the disability occur? Because obviously you could have had, there are 18 potential years where you could have started that 529 and you haven't
right.
necessarily been disabled for all those years. Now, right. if you had some exorbitant amount of money in a 529
that's not the case.
And you had no income, I might ask. But I would ask. So I would ask. You know, I wouldn't just assume, gee, they're playing a shell game with their money.
Right.
You know, because chances are if you were, you wouldn't be putting it in a 529. So that really would not raise a red flag for me. The one thing that you probably will need to be careful of is if your son gets any Social Security benefit because you are disabled, That ends at 18, and of course, that will be the year you're applying for financial aid. So he will have had several years where he has had full years of getting that disability, and then the year in which he's going to apply for financial aid, it's probably going to get cut because he will turn 18 before December 31st, I'm guessing.
Right.
And what I suggest that families do in cases like that is I suggest that they communicate to the financial aid offices at the schools, look, my kid got X dollars in disability when he was 17, or the year he turned 17, but this year it's going to be a percentage of that because he turned 18 on X date, and let them know that it's being cut. They can then factor that cut into their calculation.
Very good. Jeffrey. Can I ask you one quick question?
All right.
Regarding scholarships, what would be the best scholarship for him, besides sports, he's not really into athletics, what would be the best talent for him to have to get a scholarship? Does that make any sense to you?
It actually does make sense, and it's a sort of a hard question to answer because there are scholarships for a whole host of reasons. And one of the things I would direct you to is a site like one of the ones is FastWeb. FASTWEB. And FastWeb is a scholarship search engine. And you key in different things about you, and it tells you scholarships that you might qualify for. Most of the outside scholarships, outside of the institutions themselves, are not humongous. And the ones that are humongous literally go to, like, probably the top one half of 1% of the population.
Okay. All right, Jeffrey, thanks a lot for the call. And you said there were one particular time we did a show, and you said there are very strange scholarships available, left-handed people.
Yeah, there is one for people who are left-handed. There's all kinds of unique ones. But I'll tell you, you're generally speaking, you are not talking about large sums of money. The exceptions to that, some of the kids in my not-for-profit have some. Really, the very big ones are Coca-Cola, Dell. Those are Bill and Melinda Gates are larger, but they have gotten extremely competitive.
Mm. And those are scholastic based, or are they based on other things?
They are based on academics. It depends. Like, for example, Bill and Melinda Gates is also based on income.
Mm-hmm.
Coca-Cola, I don't believe is, but they are also based very heavily on leadership.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Jennifer in New Paltz. Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question piggybacks the 529 question from the woman earlier who has the 13-year-old. I have four children, one of whom is a junior, and we have about $50,000 saved for each child. The fact that he's a junior, can I no longer transfer that money to grandparents or aunts or somehow get rid of the whole thing and give it to somebody else so it doesn't show up on the FAFSA, or can I just do that tomorrow and it's fine?
So that would be a question that I would punt to a financial advisor.
Okay.
The one thing that I will tell you is on the CSS profile, the second financial aid form we talked about, they will ask you the amount of money you have saved in the names of your other children. The FAFSA will not, but the profile will.
I could transfer all of it then. I could get rid of pretend.
You know what? I can't tell you that because I don't know what the rules are regarding transferring of a 529.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good luck, Jennifer. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Ray in Saratoga. Ray, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have a comment regarding funding graduate studies. There was a comment earlier made about an MFA cost.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best kept secrets in higher education is this. Students who study natural science, the graduate programs, when they are accepted, pay them. They pay them up to $30,000 a year for multiple years until they earn their master's or PhD. I've advised lots of students and families as a faculty member here in the area, and many people don't know that. So it pays to study STEM-related work if you're interested in getting funding after the bachelor's degree toward the PhD or master's, because it'll cost you nothing. In fact, they will pay you. Teaching assistantships is the term here. Reason is, they have to hire folks to teach laboratories in those natural sciences, and they will not hire professors. They'll hire their graduate students. But they waive all tuition and fees and pay them up to $30,000.
Well, and I think that's a really, really good point. I don't necessarily think it is true for everyone in every STEM field.
Natural science for sure. I don't know about the others.
But again, I don't know that at every university they do it for every student. They certainly do it for a variety of...
Chemistry, biology, physics, across the board. It's been done for decades. I earned my PhD that way, for example. Hmm. And we place a lot of students. I teach at Skidmore. A lot of our students get multiple offers. They fly the students out their senior spring, try to wine and dine them once they've been accepted. And then they already, in the letter says, we're going to give you this much money. Please come to us. So it surprises me how few people know that. So I thought it would be just worth letting that out. Obviously, it may vary at other places, but it's generally been the case.
Hmm. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that information. Let's go over to Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Yeah, I got. Thank you. I have another thing outside the box. With the IRS, you can gift someone $13,000 a year. A grandparent, whoever, doesn't even have to be a relative. As a way to keep the amount of the loans down. And seems like there's not a limit if it's for education. But I'm not sure the details on that. But that's another way just to keep the debt down that you accrue.
I think it's definitely a good way to keep the debt down. Unfortunately, I think some people would love to have a grandparent that could gift them that money. If you can do it, it's a great way to go and keep the loans down.
There's a lot of people that would do it, but don't think to do it or don't know to do it.
This is all. It all sounds just quasi-legal. It doesn't sound right, but I guess that's the way things work.
I think it's legal. I think you have to have the money to gift. And for people who are aging, sometimes can be a little bit hard to part with that amount of money, not knowing how long you're going to need it.
If you have the money, Dan, we're having a fun drive. I just want to let you know it's coming up.
I'll put you on the list.
Yeah. Hey, man, thanks a lot for the call.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. I've got time for a couple more here if you want. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. So you get in college, you've already put the financial aid request in. How long does it take for them to get back to you?
So again, the first thing you're going to do is get an acceptance letter from the college or a decision letter.
Right.
Sometimes the financial aid award letter will come in with that. It doesn't always. If you apply by their deadlines, you are supposed to let the schools know what your intention is of enrolling by May 1st. May 1st is what is referred to as the candidate's reply date.
Yeah.
And my experience has been that everybody usually has their documents in hand by April 1st, which doesn't always give you a lot of time to go back and go to a second look, have discussions about unique circumstances, things like that. But sometimes it is earlier than that, but certainly by May 1st. It's part of the reason why adhering to deadlines is so incredibly crucial, because if not, you back things up and end up creating a little bit of a logjam there at the end.
Is early decision the way to go?
It depends. First of all, there are two ways to apply early. Early action and early decision. And the difference between them is that early action is not binding. Meaning you can apply to SUNY Binghamton, for example, which offers early action.
Okay.
And you get a decision early, but you still don't have to give them a decision until May 1st. Or for early action. Early decision is a binding arrangement. So if you apply to a school that has early decision, they accept you, then you will go there. At most places, they will tell you your odds do increase a little bit by applying early decision, but it means you go there.
So if you are on the edge, if you're maybe not the best student, you're okay, go for early action?
Early action doesn't tend to give you that bump. Early decision does. So there is a benefit of getting that bump. But again, you have to be sure that's where you want to go, because if they accept you, you're going.
Okay, fair enough. Well, it's all very frightening. And Linnell Engelmeyer, I'm always a little unsettled after you leave, but we'll have you back again after I calm down. Thanks. I tell you what, those of you on the line, we did run out of time. I apologize if you have called in and didn't get on the show. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. The Capital District YMCA, working to improve the health and well-being of the community with locations across the Capital District, cdymca.org. Epic, 18, Vermont Artisans, Manchester Center, an artisan-owned and operated cooperative craft gallery honoring handmade traditions and contemporary design, epochvermont.com. And Laurie Stillwell, CPA, PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, stillwellcpa.com. Thanks again to Lynell Engelmeyer. You can find out much more about what she does and links to some of the important things that she has talked about today at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. The conversation continues online at WAMC.org. Love to have you all here. Thanks so much. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Megan Finnegan answered the phones with aplomb. And our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, is this could this be true? It says it's the first birding show of the year. Rich Guthrie will be here. Okay, note to self, show up to work.